From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. The rollout of the latest COVID vaccine has been running into some bumps. There's high demand, there's insurance headaches, and supply delays are happening from coast to coast. Now, if you remember, the CDC signed off on the latest vaccine about 2 weeks ago for everyone ages 6 months and up after cases started rising again in late summer. Health experts are hoping that these new shots will help protect people during the upcoming fall and winter respiratory virus season. So why can't so many find the vaccine? Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, and he was also a member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, is joining us today to answer that question. Dr. Pate, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, before we talk about what's happening with COVID, we need to kind of switch gears for a bit because there's another health concern happening right here in Southwest Idaho. This is the measles. In fact, it's just been reported now that I believe four more people in Nampa now have it. What do we know about this?
Well, it's bad news, but not altogether shocking news. After we first heard about a week ago that a man turned up positive for measles. Measles is a virus that is transmitted either by being in close contact or even being in the same room with someone. It is the most contagious virus that I know of. I know you're going to have Dr. Hahn on later, so anything she says, I bow to her. But it's the most contagious virus I know. In fact, if somebody has measles and is transmitting the virus, that virus can remain in the air for an hour or 2 hours after that person's left the room. And if you are not vaccinated or had measles in the past, 90% of those people that are in that room will end up getting infected. What we worry about with older individuals, and it's rare for older people to get this infection because these have been longstanding childhood vaccinations to prevent them. And they're very, very effective. In fact, in the United States, we eliminated measles, I think it was in 2000, so almost a quarter of a century ago. But what we see is in cases like this gentleman who's unvaccinated, who traveled internationally where there are still measles cases, he apparently got infected on that travel, came back, and now my understanding from the press release is that these four new cases are his children, which is not surprising at all, given what I said about if they're not vaccinated, and probably they're not vaccinated because he's not vaccinated, you'd expect 90% or more to get infected. So this is not surprising. In an adult, and it did mention last week that he ended up hospitalized, and that's not shocking. Measles can make you very, very ill. In fact, it can cause inflammation around your brain or it can cause pneumonia. But what we worry about is in children, especially young children, if they get this infection, particularly under the age of two. There is a, thank God it's very rare, but there is a, even if they recover from the virus when infected, there's a rare complication that can occur years later. And to my knowledge, that complication is 100% fatal. And it's just dreadful in these cases where you think your child has recovered only to find out 5-7 years later that they've got this dreaded complication. So, you know, it's sad because measles is totally preventable. This stems back to, I think it was early 1980s when a doctor published a study suggesting that these vaccines caused autism. That article was revoked.
Debunked completely.
Yes, debunked. And there is has been over the last 40 years, there's been overwhelming evidence that these vaccines, in fact, do not cause autism and they are very safe. But that vaccine the MMR vaccine, which stands for mumps, measles, and rubella, is we usually give two doses, one when the child turns 1 year old, and the second we give them after age four. And that's like 97% effective in preventing those diseases. Measles, of course, is the scariest, but rubella is a real concern. That's the German measles. That's the R in the MMR vaccine. That's a particular concern when pregnant women get infected with that, because now that can cause a stillbirth or congenital abnormalities in the baby. So that's particularly sad when that occurs. Mm-hmm. And then the other M is mumps, which is a virus that it's named that because it causes your cheeks to puff up because it inflames the salivary glands. But it too can make you sick and can cause some complications. But this vaccine is very, very effective at preventing all three of those viral infections.
And Dr. Pate, once your kiddos get those, I mean, my kids are now 15 and 12, they don't need to be like revaccinated, correct?
No, it's highly effective and highly long lasting. So it's a very different situation than what we're dealing with flu or RSV or COVID. These give very long protection. So we don't worry about the kids who are vaccinated. What we worry about and where we saw, you'll remember, Gemma, we talked on your show, I think a few months ago, about a huge outbreak in Ohio. I think it was like something like 90 children got infected. What happens is those people that are vaccine hesitant or don't want to get these vaccines, they often are in communities where their children are together. And oftentimes that includes daycare and those kinds of situations. That's what we fear, because you get, if one of these children gets infected, as happened in Ohio, and they're in daycare, they're going to expose all of those children. And unfortunately, in daycare, that's where you're going to find these children who are particularly high risk under the age of two. So that's very scary.
So as you mentioned, Dr. Christine Hahn, who is our state epidemiologist, will be on after we've wrapped up with you today, Dr. Pate, to talk kind of more in depth about symptoms and things like that. So I want to now focus the remainder of our time, Dr. Pate, on COVID and the flu and everything else going on. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, Dr. Pate, there's been some real bumps with trying to get the COVID vaccine. I personally have gone to a couple places, you know, they've run out or they don't have it yet. So why is this rollout not going so smoothly?
Well, and you have to understand how this one is different. In all the previous vaccine rollouts, those vaccines were paid for by the government. Everybody remembers you didn't have to pay for the vaccine. It was free. The government got it out, and it was relatively quickly distributed because of that. Now the difference is, because we have ended the public health emergencies and the authorizations to pay for these vaccines, now this is in the commercial market, meaning that either you have to pay or your insurance company has to pay. Now, there are programs for those people that are uninsured and can't afford it. So we certainly want you to contact your public health office, or there's some clinics that where you can get the vaccine for free. So even if you don't have insurance or can't afford it, please get it. But you're going to have to go through an extra step where the state and the federal government will pay for this. But for most everybody else, the problem is that when providers order the vaccine, so let's say I have my clinic up, Dr. Pate's clinic, I have to order the vaccine and I can't wait till you say you want it and then order it. I have to get it ahead of time so I'm ready to give it. And when I do, I have to buy it in bulk. And I have to pay them ahead of time. And then I have to hope that I have enough patients coming to get that vaccine that I can recover the money I spent on it. Well, we all know that they're charging a lot for this vaccine. These mRNA vaccines are going anywhere from about $100 to $130 or so per dose. So if you have to buy in bulk, say 20 doses, that doctor's going to have to go ahead and put out that money and then take the risk that maybe there's not enough demand. And we've seen this in Idaho. There's been so much disinformation that a lot of people are not getting the vaccine. And so there's a lot of smaller practices that are just not going to want to take this financial risk. So we have to look to the bigger clinics particularly. And I contacted, when you alerted me that you couldn't find the vaccine for children under 12, even though it has been authorized, I contacted Primary Health Medical Group because they're a very large group. And so it could make more sense for them to do this. And I asked them, can you tell me what the deal is? Because even when I went to on the government site to find out where could I get find that vaccine for young children, I couldn't find any identified sites. And for people that are listeners that want to follow this in the future and be able to determine where vaccine is, you can go to a website that is called vaccines.gov. And that will help you if you want to put in your zip code and you can identify which vaccine you want, what age group, et cetera. And so that can give you some good information about where you might be able to find the vaccine. But I contacted Primary Health. They said they are offering the pediatric COVID vaccinations at two of their clinics. Again, that has to probably do for this efficiency and buying in bulk. They are offering it at the Nampa Clinic and at the Crossroads Pediatric Clinics. So that is one place you can look at. The other problem besides the cost, Gemma, is that a lot of insurance companies have not yet got this all processed. And what we saw reports coming out of pharmacies, which a lot of pharmacies carry the vaccines, but they were having problems getting the insurance company to authorize and pay for it. Now, if you're in a health plan that is an ACA compliant plan, that is an Affordable Care Act plan. And that will be most everybody. It's not everybody, but most of those plans will be. Then it will be offered to you at zero cost, but it still has to be approved and paid for by the insurance company. But we're just having problems getting this coordinated where the insurance company says, yes, go ahead and give Susie the vaccine and don't charge her anything. I suspect that will get worked out fairly quickly, but that has created bumps as well. And so we've just got a lot of issues, plus the, you know, just the issue of getting that vaccine shipped and received and so forth. But I do think it will improve over the next few weeks, but it is a much rougher go than before when the government paid for all of this.
So Dr. Pate, with that said, and I appreciate you doing that research with the pediatric dosage, because as I said, I have an 11-year-old who turns 12 in November, and I could not find anywhere where I could get him the vaccine. And so I know I'm not the only one in that boat. And I'm thinking, like, I've got kids in school, and you know, there's viruses going around right now, not just COVID, but you know, there's just a lot of, it's school. There's a lot of sickness going around.
Yes.
But with that said, what about then the flu shot combined with the COVID vaccine? You and I have talked offline about this before, that if you have the ability to kind of wait a little bit, should we be waiting a little bit longer if we can to get both the COVID and the flu shot at the same time?
There is an argument for that. So first of all, let's talk about the flu vaccine by itself. We certainly encourage everybody over 6 months to get the flu vaccine. And it does appear, we never know until the season's over, but we're looking at information from the Southern Hemisphere that's already gone through their winter. And it did appear that this vaccine is a pretty good match. It's never perfect because we have to make some, you know, educated guesses, but it looks like it's a pretty good match. What we want to do is time your flu vaccine to the flu activity, though. And the reason for timing that one is that the protection you get from the flu shot does wane fairly quickly. So, we think from past studies that you're losing at least 7% of the protection every month. It could be more. And so it's still helpful, and I get mine every year. But what I do is I wait until I start seeing the cases increase, and then I get my shot then, because certainly we can see flu activity all the way through February, March. In fact, I've seen a case where somebody was identified in May 1 year. So it has a tail. But the biggest part of it usually is end of November through about February. Now, I say usually because we've seen recent instances where some of these viruses have been thrown off a bit when they're occurring, but that's usually when we see it. I'm monitoring that flu data, at least what's publicly reported. Now, if Dr. Hahn has some inside information, absolutely go with what she says. Right now, I don't see any significant activity here in Idaho, so I would hold off a little bit. I don't think it's going to be too long, and maybe just 2 or 3 weeks or so, and I'll certainly update you every program. But I say that because we've seen activity pick up in Wyoming. So I suspect that we won't be too much later. Right now, the hot spots for flu, and they're not even that hot, but they are significantly picked up. It's like in Texas and in New York. So if you're traveling those places, that would be a reason to go ahead and get your flu shot. But otherwise, I would wait just a little bit till we give the word here on the show, or if Dr. Hahn says something, then go with that. The flu shot, remember, if you're over 65, make sure you get the high dose quadrivalent vaccine. Your provider should know that, but make sure you're getting that. Now, the issue about getting the vaccines together, flu and COVID, here's what we know. We know it's safe to do that. Here's what we think, but I couldn't say we have absolute proof. What we think is that if you get your COVID shot in the arm that you received your primary series, if you remember, or if your provider's written that down, then get it in that same arm. And immunologically, it makes sense, but I'm not going to bore your listeners with that. So get it in the same arm if you know. We think you'll get a little bit better response with that. In addition, and there's like two studies showing that. So that's a higher degree of confidence. Again, not proof, but confidence. And then we've got one study that is showing that if you get the COVID and your flu shot at the same time, getting that flu shot seems to give an additional little boost. Not huge, but some boost, and we'll take all we can get. So there might be an advantage to getting them at the same time. Now, with that said, if you've got somebody in your family who's going to be seeing the doctor, let's say this week, and you know that it's like pulling teeth to get that person to the doctor, and you know you're going to have one shot, pardon the pun, to get this person vaccinated, go ahead and get it now. Just do whatever you need to. It's better to be vaccinated than not. And so don't worry about the perfect timing. But if you've got somebody highly motivated who's willing to go whenever it makes sense, then I would just hold a little bit about on the flu and then get both the same time, because it's not going to be too long. Now, the final thing I'll say about this, however, if you are doing some things that are going to put you in high-risk situations, for example, you're getting ready to leave the country, then we need to completely think about this different. So I'm just talking about somebody who's going to be here in Idaho, who's already taking precautions to protect themselves, isn't putting themselves in a lot of high-risk conditions. I'd wait just a little bit. If you're in high-risk situations, go ahead and get your vaccines now.
Dr. Pate, before we get on to listener questions really quickly, we should let folks know that the federal government is once again sending out free COVID tests.
Yes, and I certainly encourage people to take advantage of this. If you go to covid.gov/tests, It's really quite easy. You can order. They will send you four rapid antigen tests free of charge through the mail. So just go ahead and sign on for that. And every household can order these four tests free of charge. If you have, you still have some tests in your house, remember, many of those tests, they have revised the expiration dates because we used shorter expiration dates earlier when we didn't have a lot of experience and didn't know how long they'd be good. But tests have shown that they are reliable past the expiration dates in many cases, often 6 to 18 months more. And when you go to that same website, covid.gov/tests, there's also a link that will take you to the FDA site where they've updated these expiration dates. So before you throw out your old tests, go there, check. You can check for your specific tests and see how much additional time you have on that. And when you get your new tests, then just make sure use your oldest tests first that are still not expired. And of course, the big thing when you test, make sure that that control line shows up. If the control line does not show up, usually it's marked C on the test strip, then disregard the test and don't give it any credit.
Dr. Pate, Sherry wrote in and she says they have guests coming into town on October 7th. They're coming from out of state. They're 83 years old. They plan to get their booster shots this Friday. So Sherry asks, how much protection will the booster give them in 1 week's time? Can we safely take them into restaurants in Boise and elsewhere and assume that they won't get COVID? What does Dr. Pate recommend?
Well, Sherry, thanks for asking. It's a bit of a tough question, but let me tell you the best that I know to date. So first of all, assuming that these 83-year-olds have already had their prior shots, and sounds like that would be a safe assumption, then you know, typically when you're first getting vaccinated, we don't see the immune response really kind of mature or ripen for about 2 weeks. But when you're boosting, because you've already had this initial response, it is shorter. So there is a good possibility that by 7 to 10 days, they may have a significant level of boost. Now, with that said, it is not 100% protection. It is really good protection against getting severely ill, ending up in the hospital, getting on a ventilator, requiring critical care, dying. Very, very good at preventing those things. However, it is less protective about getting the infection itself. There does appear, we just really don't have a good way to quantify it. It does appear that for a period of time after these shots, it's certainly less with these newer variants, but there is a period of time that may be weeks, maybe as long as a few months, where you are going to be less likely to get infected and less likely to transmit, but we don't have the data to speak to that with great confidence. The other thing I would say is be sure, remember, don't just worry about restaurants. Restaurants are an issue, but you said out of state, so I would say there's probably a good chance they're flying. Don't forget airports. Don't forget airplanes. Our best, you know, that we're not monitoring cases very well, but we are looking at wastewater, and wastewater would tell us that you generally should presume that about one in every 50 people right now is infected. And so there's going to be lots more people than that in the airport. So I would say, and they're probably going to be traveling even before that week timeline. So I would say, don't forget about good quality, well-fitting masks in the airport, even though they're vaccinated, and then to reduce that exposure. And then even if vaccinated, if you're going to go to restaurants where you can, and of course, now we've got wonderful weather here, try to look for those outdoor opportunities, try to look for well-ventilated spaces, try not to be packed in with a lot of people. Those things will also all help.
Okay, I've got 4 minutes left, Dr. Pate, and I want to try to get at least two more questions in. So Amy writes in, she has an 18-year-old daughter who just tested positive for COVID, no underlying health conditions. She's gotten all of the recommended COVID vaccines. her daughter says she's already starting to feel better on just day three. So the question is, how long does her 18-year-old daughter need to wait before getting this new COVID vaccine?
Okay, so be quick. The CDC says 3 months. Dr. Pate says might be better to wait 4 to 6.
Okay, so she really does need to wait a while.
She does. We have now determined that, consider this infection that she actually just got a booster in effect. So we find is that if we give them too close together, then you don't get as good of an immune response. So CDC says 3 months. I would say the limited data that we do have, I think argues more for wait at least 4 months. If 5 may arguably be better, but wait 4 months, and that should give us a better response.
Okay, 2 minutes left, but I really want to get to this question because Donna wrote in saying she was about to get her RSV vaccine today. However, she says a couple of her friends suggested she needs to wait until more information emerges because they found articles, they're quoting the CDC and the Scientific American, pointing out some risks of the vaccine. So Donna wants to know, Dr. Pate, are there risks with the RSV vaccine?
There are risks to every vaccine. And so what you have to do is you don't just look at the risks of the vaccine, look at the risks of the disease. So for Donna's situation, what is her risk of getting RSV? If she works in a daycare, high. If she works as a teacher in school, high. If she has young grandkids that visit often, high. How, on the other hand, if Donna is not around children, then her risks for RSV are much lower, and therefore the risks of the vaccine may be relatively higher. Most of the risks of RSV are fairly typical of other vaccines. I got it, felt sick for a day, but then I'm fine. There have been, probably the report she saw is that there were some mentions of some Guillain-Barré. That is a common, rare side effect that is common to a number of vaccines. However, we didn't see it in enough cases to make us think that that is a real concern. Nevertheless, we won't know till we roll this out broader. It did not stop me, and it hadn't stopped me from the other vaccines. So I would say if she's got risk of getting RSV, get the vaccine. If she doesn't have that many risks, then yeah, maybe you do hold off.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, really appreciate all of your time and your expertise, such valued information. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Remember, if you have COVID-19 questions or any type of public health questions, because we are definitely entering into that season, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and Dr. Pate will be back next week to answer those questions. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.